This week on Rain on Your Parade, I make the case for voting for Joe Biden, even if you're a far left ne'er-do-well. Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here, as always, with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
Hi, J.L. Hi, everybody. How you doing? Good to see you.
Good to see you. I'm okay. Had an interesting weekend, which we'll talk about briefly, but some big announcements, I think, that the audience would want to know about. Next week, we will be doing a live episode at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. I guess... will it be through my YouTube? Yep. Like, is that how people will watch it?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. To go to the YouTube, we'll set everything up. I'll try to get it set up before maybe like a couple days before, so you can kind of join the waiting room and do all right. That stuff. That is dependent on how much shit I have to do before the live stream, but it will be on YouTube, and I think you'll tweet out the link and all that stuff,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
We'll get the link to you, but definitely head over to YouTube at what time are we doing?
6:30 p.m. Eastern.
6:30 p.m. Go to JL's YouTube, not the Slickback YouTube, although you could follow us there too. That'd be very nice.
That would be nice.
Go to JL's YouTube, and who's our guest?
Steve Okun. And if I always asked him, could your middle initial be A so I can call you Steve A. Okun?
Right on.
DJ Steve Aoki. Yeah, okay. Anyway, he is the producer of a great documentary called God and Country. Rob Reiner is one of the other producers of the documentary. I went with the guy I know, not the Hollywood legend that I don't know, yeah, as our guest. But we're one degree of separation from Hollywood legend Rob Reiner.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
And we might curry favor with Rob Reiner if we move some numbers on his documentary. But I watched this documentary like 2 months ago, and it's great. It's about Christian nationalism, which is sort of, you know, a topic in keeping with an election year, sure, with Trump, with this podcast. I obviously am a very well-known Christian nationalist. Kidding. But it was a great documentary. It's like 90 minutes. And so what I figured is, because this is sort of something that would appeal to a lot of our listeners, basically in the show notes for this episode, and I'll post it on social media as well, will be a link to watch the movie. This will sound a little convoluted, but, and I have to be upfront with the audience too, I was going to recommend this, as you know, I was going to recommend this as an episode and have him, Steve, on to discuss this topic and the movie,
yep,
and just tell everybody, hey, go rent it. It's $5 on Amazon. But he offered to me, he says, well, they do a partnership thing where through this site called Kinema, which I'd never heard of, but they like basically allow Rain on Your Parade to sort of host a VOD screening, mm-hmm, so that at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Monday, okay, 2 days before the live episode, if you go to the link in the show notes for this episode, you will be able to, it's the same price as it is on Amazon. It's right, not like we're getting anything better, but we get a cut of the rental. So in other words, if you can't watch it at 8:30 on Monday, then just rent it from Amazon before the episode. But if you can watch it Monday evening at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, just use our link and we get a little taste.
Yeah, why not? Throw us a few shekels.
Yeah. So it's a great movie. It's like, I think it's just over 90 minutes.
Perfect movie length.
Yeah. And I feel weird like doing the whole like, give us some, because I wasn't going to do that until I asked Steve to come on the show.
Right.
And then he said, oh, you could do this. And I said, well, I'm not gonna. That seems fair.
Twist my arm.
Right. It's like it's kind of. I am, as you know, integrity is my greatest strength and my greatest weakness. Yeah. And I said, but what if people think I'm a shill for the movie and not just giving an authentic endorsement?
Yeah.
And then I slept on it and said, screw it, I'll shill.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the documentary, and I look forward to talking about the movie and the general topic of Christian nationalism, which is becoming just bigger and bigger in this country, mm-hmm, as the nationalism plays a much bigger role in the lives of Christians in this country than the Christ part.
Yeah, we're living in weird times.
Yeah. So so it'll be in the show notes. When you look at this episode, it'll be in the YouTube description of this episode. So, mm-hmm, you'll be able to find it very easily. But I recommend the movie. If you can't make the 8:30 p.m. Monday time, just rent it at your leisure on Amazon. But if you can make the 8:30, we'd appreciate using that link. It doesn't cost you any extra, but the show gets a taste from that. So yeah, there. But very excited for that episode. And obviously, if you're on Amazon Prime, Mike, what do you think I want these people to do? Go to my special half blackface and watch it, share it with friends, and give it a 5-star review. We got one new review. We're up to 33. Patrick right. Ewing, Larry Bird. I'm trying to get that Wilt Chamberlain 100 meme.
Oh yeah,
that's what I'll do if when I get to. I probably won't get to, let's be honest.
You never know.
I've been asking for a month.
Keep banging the drum.
Well, you know, I think at this point I'm getting close to giving up because at this point you sort of go, why not? What is it? What is it about free and taking 5 seconds that my fans just won't cross that Rubicon for me?
Yeah.
So this weekend went up to my older nephew's school in upstate New York, which is a school for autistic, like kind of post high school, you know, that sort of transition, that very important and difficult transition period. It's a beautiful space. I haven't seen him in like a couple of months. So at least up there, and it was very nice. And it was also, it's one of those things where it's like half life affirming, half depressing is the wrong word, but you know, they had a concert for the people. So I saw, you know, my nephew, I went with my brother and my nephew, and then there were other autistic folks there. And then I think maybe other disabled people from the community, like not autistic, but other
sure.
issues. And this very nice duo did like an hour of songs. My nephew enjoyed it. And so did several people there. But I was just watching, and it was just one of those moments where I go, what am I doing with my life? Because you see people there.
Oh boy.
Working there. You see some people with money doing their part to help, but you also see people whose jobs it is on a daily basis to like try to nurture and help. You know, these people have more fulfilling lives and really, let's be honest, put the family's minds at ease as well. Because if they're not equipped to fully take care of their child, which is a tough thing to confront, you're also putting the family at ease, sort of like we're more equipped. We have the resources, we have the training, we have people who are willing to do this as their work, as their job. And then I saw this guy walk in and just, I would call him a middle-class man's Travis Kelce. And a couple of the autistic young guys were thrilled to see this guy. Like he was a rock star.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like about 6'5", 6'6". No hint of a Uyghur accent and looked like, you know, if Kelce just didn't go to like a fancy barber, he just let the hair grow out and it didn't, you know, wasn't a pro athlete, but it was like, I looked at this guy and I said, you're the middle class man's Travis Kelce. And these guys were just like, yeah, like very excited to see him. And I thought, is that what I should do? Like for the adoration I'm seeking, maybe comedy is the wrong thing. I'm a big guy. I'm taller than this poor man's Travis Kelce.
Well, I can tell you, yeah, my sister is in similar type of programs for people with Down syndrome. I got to stop calling them kids because she's in her 30s.
Right.
People with Down syndrome. And there's always at least one of those guys that they love, like one of the teachers or supervisors or counselors or whatever the program is. There's always a guy who, when he walks in, they're like, all right, Rick. All right, Rick's here. They love him. So I'm not surprised to hear that.
Right. But watching the guy, all I could think was, God, Taylor Swift is shallow.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, here's a Travis Kelce that works with special needs adults.
Yeah, and she's dating the guy who plays football.
And she's dating the spiritually poor man's this guy,
right.
Travis Kelce. And I just thought, this is the world we live in.
Yeah.
And you know what makes this guy a good guy? I'm the one projecting the bitterness onto him.
Yeah.
He seemed to be glowing and warm and happy to brighten the days of these folks.
Living his life.
And so we went to the concert, brought my nephew back to his dormitory. We left. And then on the way home, we saw a deer hit by a car.
Oh, no.
And
you saw it actually hit by the car?
No. We were less than a minute maybe behind. Ugh. And then as we're looking, no, even worse. The deer was just sitting there with his like busted hip, blinking, looking around. And I was like, that deer's not dead. that deer is like probably shutting off into like, you know, kind of a shock mode of like, oh, shut down, sit here. And cars were just like, and I just thought, what is this world? What is this world?
I could tell the vibes were a little weird when you came in.
Oh, I've been having a horrible life. I've just been having, I've been up since 3:50 a.m., which got no sympathy in this room.
Because you tried to, what do they say when you try to compare?
One up?
Tried to one up for sure. But I was just bitching about the fact that I've been here since 9 a.m.
Well, can't you greet me like I'm poor man's Travis Kelce? I know I'm the biggest guy in Slickback Studios. I walk in here, it's like, yeah. No more radical left chicks. It's now my giant centrist buddy. Let's go. But I was just, I mean, I was, I think I leave my apartment. I'm by the way, I'm going to see somebody on Wednesday. Finally, I got the appointment with the psychiatrist. I might as well just hand him my paycheck from the week.
Yeah.
And be like, here you go. Let's cut out the middleman here.
Yeah.
No need for this to go to a bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see about some antidepressants. But I don't want to leave my house. And I just look at Cookie, my dog. People who don't know, you know, I look at Cookie and I just go, why would I want to leave you? Mm-hmm. You're just chilling here.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to sit here and pet you. And then I don't even turn on the TV. I'm depressed, right?
Maybe. Maybe.
Well, we'll see. But having the comedy, it's amazing that I could be depressed when you look at the career I've had. But yeah, so the most important thing is for everybody, and I'm talking to the people who are, you know, our base. I feel like I wouldn't recommend God and Country to you if I A, didn't think you would like it. And
is
B,
that where we're going back to?
If it wouldn't enrich the show. Well, I'm wrapping up the intro. Travis, no, I wrote down half blackface, check. God and Country, check. Nephew Travis Kelce, check. Oh, and shows. I'm in Washington, D.C., June 28th and 29th at the D.C. Comedy Loft. So please get tickets to that. There's no reason on God's green earth to wait until the last minute, because what that does, I think my fans like me the way people like veal.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I like my meat young and terrified.
Yeah.
That brings out the flavor.
Yeah. And like it's tender.
With me, it's like, I don't want JL to have a day where he goes, oh, sweet, I can fucking mentally prepare for these shows knowing that we sold a bunch of tickets. They're like, buy the tickets at 7:58 p.m. In fact, no, buy them at 8:03 and walk in late. just so he's backstage going, this is going to be fucking terrible. Yeah. I can't think about my set. And then when he finally realizes he has a crowd, he'll have all of 90 seconds to organize his thoughts before going out there. So no reason to hesitate on those tickets. I'm doing a fundraiser for Biden on July 7th at the Stonewall Inn.
Are you really?
Ally.
That's impressive, JL.
Yeah. I think it's a fundraiser.
I got to tell Ronnie.
Well, I think it's a fundraiser. Or maybe I'm supposed to just go in the leather mask and be GIMP for the night.
Yeah.
Maybe. That'd be more fun. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I think so.
But yeah, that's July 7th. That's on minimum donation, $50 to get a ticket.
Okay.
But it's a good lineup. My friend Adam Sank put it together. So those are your two shows coming up, D.C. and New York. Stonewall, if you don't know, is a landmark gay bar. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, in case there's a few of my fans are, you know, I'm not going there. I like your comedy, bro, but I'm not going to the Fanuc bar.
Yeah.
And on a Sunday, bro, you know, so I'm supposed to leave my Guma's apartment, go home, go with the wife to church, go to Sunday dinner at my ma's, and then you want me to leave early so I can go to some gay bar to watch some Biden fundraiser.
Although I will note, we came up in this week's Mike Coscarelli rules. Stonewall at one time owned by the mob during the actual Stonewall riot, the mob and the gays were just like this, simpatico.
Well, watch yourself, Mike. Watch yourself. I wouldn't, you know, you see what Mike did. He said they were like this. I don't think so. I don't think this isn't there. Remember The Sopranos, what they did to the chubby guy? Yep. It was, you know, taking it in the rear.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think I'm going to Stonewall, but, you know, you want to see JL raise money for Biden. Biden, please. All right, guys. Well, that was Vinny. And get the hell out of here, Vinny. We're going to talk. Vinny, kind of a good segue.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk politics when we get back. And I'm going to make a kindler, gentler case for Joe Biden to all the Biden doubters out there for about 3 minutes until I explode. So we'll be back with that after the break. And we're back. Mike, how was the break?
My favorite part of the show, as
really
you know.
It really is. It's not my favorite. Because I feel like a prize fighter just sitting in the corner ready to go out there and start throwing haymakers again.
And I have no control over you.
Yeah.
I say you start
don't
spieling.
Don't go for the knockout. Just win on points. Shut the fuck up, Mike. Oh. I told you. Go for the points. Anyway. I went a little viral for a tweet last week. It was all inspired. The reason I wanted to bring this back, we were going to talk about cycling this week, which is a topic we will talk about. Mm-hmm. But this week I felt moved to talk about politics again. But it was inspired by our discussion off mic before last week's show. And I had said to you, I was like, are you running the camera by any chance? Not that I expected you to, but just and you were like, no. And you didn't give me like a no. You were like, no, what the fuck do you think? What? And I was like, oh, geez. So I ended up. Instead, writing a very good blog about all this. And, oh, no, it's been read a lot.
The hardest working man around show business.
Yes. And then I posted my tweet kind of attacking the sort of like, I won't vote for Biden folks.
Yeah.
And it got seen by like over like 1.3 million people on Twitter. So it was a good one. And I thought, you know what? Some of the people have been saying, you know, you're not going to win over any converts by like attacking and shaming. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, probably not. But sometimes you just have to, you know, just like, hey, fat shaming, it may not be the nice thing, but sometimes it works.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, like people who don't want to vote for Joe Biden, you know, one of my main overarching things is what. You know, for many of them, it's Gaza. We know that. That's for many. That's been the deciding issue and referring to what happens in Gaza as genocide. At which point I always sort of wonder, as much as people hated the Iraq war, that wasn't as big a liability for George Bush as Gaza has become for Joe Biden.
Do you want me to tell you why I think that is?
Sure. Anti-Semitism.
So there's no, I don't.
No, that was a joke. That was okay. A joke. I always joke about anti-Semitism.
And maybe, you know, like I'm not denying the fact that there's probably led to a rise of anti-Semitism, this whole situation just in general. But I think the difference is, I think that there are reports at least of more civilians being killed as opposed to Iraq, which was by all accounts seemed like more of an occupation, which still ain't great. But
but the numbers of civilians dead were in the hundreds of thousands by the time Iraq war was over. Yeah.
But I also think that I think that generationally we were now we're farther away from the World War II generation, Vietnam generations where war was a little more normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the fact is that a lot of people probably are looking for a reason to not like Biden to begin with. But
preach.
I think young people, the Ronnies of the world, my Ronnie, my 23-year-old sidekick.
Just like Ronnie said, I won't vote for Biden.
You know, we don't always completely agree on her, how I'm a little radical. She's way radical. And I do think that there is, when you don't feel like you have any money and you're paying taxes and you know that you feel like the taxes should be spent here to make things better here. And you know that where our taxes are going to funding a lot of the Israeli military equipment. How would you say it? Weapons. And we kind of keep giving them. It is not that different than Iraq.
Okay.
And I think the other thing is we also Iraq happened already.
Yeah.
We both lived through Iraq. To me, in a lot of ways,
No, I didn't.
To me, in a lot of ways, this whole situation, I think part of the reason why it's such a bummer is because we kind of did this already, didn't we? The difference is we don't have American troops there, but it's a pretty similar situation, don't you think?
I don't think it's a good situation, but I don't think it's similar. And before, like, I didn't want to start with this, but it seemed like the natural place to start, unfortunately.
And I know we don't want to harp the whole time.
Yeah. But it's okay. I started it because I thought, you know, get it out of the way before we get to the important stuff. But it's one of those things that, and it's the hardest of the issues I will bring up to make the case of, like, because without sounding like a get over it, grow up, kids.
Yeah.
Sometimes people die.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going for that. But there is an element to it, which is like, we have been supporting Israel. Now, there are plenty of people who just hate this, our general relationship with Israel. And not all of them are anti-Semitic.
Yeah,
I'm sure many of them, most of them are not, but I'm sure there are some.
Yeah.
But there is this kind of weird... Well, we support them because they're a strategic ally. They're a democracy. They are. And then there's that like creepy evangelical vibe from like the right wing here. So there's there's a coalition. And then there's influential Jewish people in America who have obviously an affinity and a connection and a loyalty to Israel. So there's like it is for a little country. It has a lot of talent, a lot of power. And a lot of a weird coalition in America of people who support it.
And it's our baby. Let's be honest. I mean, we kind of created that, didn't we?
UN. I mean, we had a strong role. I think England also had a very strong role in it, but it was, but I think the first thing that I would say is, I think you pointed out the people looking for a reason I don't know about Biden, but then you could feel really guilty if you're like, so you're not going to vote for Biden because you're not feeling Biden.
Yeah.
You're not, oh, he's giving arms to Israel.
Right.
I fucking hate Biden. Like you get to like righteously weaponize your discomfort with him into like this focused blast. Like Godzilla minus one.
I get it. But
I'm just saying that that's like part of the pivot.
Yeah.
To like, and I'm not saying it's, but I also think there needs to be a little bit of a dose of reality, which is like Joe Biden, I think, is a fairly pliable Democrat given where he's moved on certain issues since taking office. But he is not going to become Bernie Sanders, and he's certainly not going to become Bernie Sanders just for the hell of it.
Well, of course.
Like without legislative majorities, he's not just going to go, actually, I think we need to stop all of this.
Yeah.
So there's a realism that is not happening, which is like, this has been our country's policy. Joe Biden is not the guy who will take this radical left swing all of a sudden. I think Joe Biden has expressed discomfort. I know there will be people who go, oh, discomfort. Wow. Great. And it's like, well, he's playing a diplomatic game. And I'm sorry that it's not what you want. This fantasy where an American president immediately cuts ties with its longest standing ally in the Middle East and just goes, you stop it. We're not giving you any, like, we are against this. We are going to vote for UN resolutions that this is genocide. We're going to do, like, all these things, they're not going to happen. And the last point of this, I'm not saying, and I think the protesting, much like our government, just inches forward instead of taking maybe the big leaps, climate change being one of the, instead of taking big leaps that we need, the best we can usually hope for, especially under this political climate, is little inching forward of progress. And Joe Biden, I think, has done that on this issue as well. I know it's not what people want, but I think his strategy, and I think I may have said this on a previous episode, his strategy was October 7th was an awful atrocity. Israel is our longstanding ally, mm-hmm. and I'm basically as old as Israel. So my political career has come up with most of the major world events that have taken place in Israel.
Sure.
But I don't trust Bibi Netanyahu. I'm not going to fucking say that. I don't come out in my opening speech like, America stands with you, but Bibi, you're a cunt.
No, of course not. Right.
So he, whether it's a failed strategy, a naive strategy, I don't think, other than Jimmy Carter suddenly recovering from death and becoming president, there's no major American politician with a chance at the White House who would just be like, no, like done.
Yeah.
And the alternative is Trump, who on October 8th, my theory is that he would have said, nuke him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it would have been worse if it was Trump.
And so while this is the biggest example and the toughest one for people of conscience, now I'm going to sound like one of us, for people, brothers and sisters of conscience. But I mean that for real people of conscience who are like, this is a red line for me for real reasons. Like, I just think this is, I don't like being part, our government being part of this atrocity. I think it's one of those things where I go, Biden is your worst, best hope in this situation, in this climate. Like,
I get it, but I also think that sucks. And yes. I think that there isn't that kind of the point of having a vote?
It is
doing something, even choosing to do nothing with your vote.
No, of course. And you can do nothing.
I preface this also by saying that I am not sitting here saying that I'm not going to vote for him, because right. I agree with you in theory about all of this stuff.
Right.
But I, being the conduit and being the middleman between the younger generation who I'm hearing and I frankly understand,
right.
and the people that are like your generation and a little bit older, I know that there's the middle ground is where we have to land and should land and everything. But I would argue
that Trump will not land us in the middle ground.
I agree.
Like he will push us out of that, out of, even if we're at a bad part of the middle, you know, like the 20th percentile, yeah. Trump will be like zero.
Yeah.
And my question, and I wrote this in the blog that you scoffed at earlier, but I had said, now a Trump presidency, what is the number of lives lost due to Trump being in office rather than Biden? What's the critical mass that makes a left-wing progressive go, okay, now I think I do have to choose the lesser of two evils, as I might think of it?
Well, I just think in general, I think if the divergence that I have with the youth, the 20 somethings that are radical, who I support, but I do think that you're naive to think that Trump's not going to make it worse. So right. if the Gaza is the hardline issue, the way that Biden's handled it to me has not been great. And I would like to see Biden kind of swing it around a little bit in the other direction to kind of put a little more handcuffs on Netanyahu to say, like, enough with this.
He should literally have handcuffs, Netanyahu, not metaphorical. He should be in jail. And not just for the shit he did before October 7th. Yeah,
for sure. Sure. But I think that it is a naivete to think that by abstaining in the election and allowing Trump to win, which seems very possible.
Yeah. It's getting more possible, Mike. I know. Yes. I was very strong in my, no, Mike, it's not happening. Now I'm more like, can I bet Chris Kreider to score a goal?
I told you this
Biden
months ago.
And Biden to win? Can I get that parlay?
I told you this months ago, and I couldn't figure out why you were so confident that it wouldn't happen. And then I think that the thing that flipped you was seeing that he got convicted and it seems to have not mattered at all. It's only empowering his people.
But what bothered me really, you're right, but it wasn't the empowering his people. It was that it didn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
That bothered me.
Yeah.
Because
he's doing Logan Paul's podcast. He's, right. You know,
we're now, he's signed a Prime endorsement.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But it,
I bet he's got 100 comments on his special.
Yeah. 100 reviews. Hey. It's one of those, before I get, I'm going to get to like broader topics. I want to go through sort of the American political process,
yeah, go ahead.
Which is, but to me, it's Joe Biden is the best you're going to get in this country.
Yeah.
Like that is, and I know it, but I need like, when people say things like they should nominate better candidates, you know, there is a, let's, okay, maybe we'll revisit Gaza, but I want to get to this because there are so many different topics and I'm speaking to progressives. I'm not, take it as a sign of respect that I'm talking to like young, angry progressives, even though they won't listen unless you give it to Ronnie.
I have to hand it to them.
Oh, okay. and they'll go, what's this?
Who's this old guy?
Grandpa. But the MAGA people can't be, you know, they're like Michael Biehn in The Terminator when Kyle Reese is saying they can't be bargained with.
Yeah.
They can't be reasoned with.
Yeah.
They just won't stop until you are dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's them. So we're not talking to them. But for every progressive issue you care about, Trump will be worse.
Yeah.
Every single one. And my question is, what point, what critical mass of death, I need to speak in stark terms, from climate change, from criminal justice, you know, bullet, right wing sort of criminal justice, everything, all the above, what will be the number of people? What will be the number of forced pregnancies? What will be the number of additional Gazan deaths?
Yeah.
The leash, the handcuffs off of Netanyahu. At what point do you say, I have to save some lives? Because the world is an awful place and the Middle East is one of the most crazy. And what is the number? When do you get to the point where you say, I no longer can be righteous, seeing that my abstinence from this process, which I'm doing to prove a point and to make a statement, is going to cause additional harm. It's not going to stop. Is punishing Joe Biden symbolically? Joe Biden will be fine. Joe Biden, worst case scenario, is he takes a pack of Viagra, fucks his nice looking older wife, and is no longer has to deal with being president and can look after his son with his drug addiction and like, be a family man
and be dead in like a year and a half.
He's a super octogenarian. I hope he lives to a fucking 105.
He's not going to survive this presidency if he wins again.
So what I'm saying is like this, I'm punishing Joe Biden.
I get you.
That is cutting off your president to spite your country.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, I mean, if you look at the other really big issue that I think is on the ballot is abortion. And I mean, if Trump gets in again, you would know this better than I would. What are the chances that we have like a almost 100% Republican appointed Supreme Court if that happens?
Oh, I mean, Clarence Thomas will probably retire.
Yep.
Which means he'll appoint like a 28-year-old, like self-hating black guy. he's going to be on the court for 900 years. I've appointed Tim Scott Seaman to the Supreme Court. And then maybe, you know, you have to wonder about Kagan and Sotomayor. Mm-hmm. Sotomayor is diabetic.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be 100%, unless, of course, he just authorizes like the execution of like, you know, the judges.
Dissolves the Supreme Court.
Ketanji Brown Jackson will be, you know, a chocolate chip in a racist sugar cookie for the next 20 years if Trump gets back into office.
But truthfully, how bad could that majority get?
Well, no, it's as bad as it's going to be. Like in terms of like,
so it can't actually get worse.
I mean,
other than just appointing
like Thomas, if Thomas retires, you're just nominating another. So it's, another it keeps the same balance.
Yeah, right.
You have to worry about Sotomayor's health, right. Kagan's health, Ketanji Brown. You have to worry about everybody's health, but Ketanji Brown Jackson is like in her early 50s. But I think I think the Supreme Court, the real damage is just decades of this Supreme Court. Like, yeah. Trump has already, and that is, let's just go issue by issue. I want to start first at the primary level. I'm going to really just go, like, when I hear people saying to me, Democrats should just nominate better people. Like I'm part of the problem. And by the time it gets to the righteous social media warriors on the left, well, you've given me no options.
Yeah.
So, which I would say, well, why don't you, you're never going to vote for a Republican is my guess. Why don't you register with the Democratic Party? No. And there's the first righteous stand for fucking nothing, which is, I'm not joining the Democrats. Well, then shut the fuck up. Who've opted to be Democrats are going to pick, because a lot of these left-wing people who'll be like, I'm independent or I don't vote, they would never vote for a Republican. So they're always looking for the, you have to give me the Democrat I want while I abstain from this process because I'm holier than thou and righteous.
But JL, don't you think it's funny that the Republicans get the Republican that they want all the time?
Yes.
It's not weird to you that how often do you talk to a person who's a Republican and they go, you know, I don't really love him, but I'm a Republican. I'm going to vote for him.
Trump in 2016, to be honest, then they fell in love with him because.
But not now, not this election.
Well, the problem is the Republicans who really don't like him have kind of left the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But the ones who are still there are like, gee.
Right. So, this was something Kuby said to me, Ron Kuby, my mentor and lawyer. He would say when I was working on his radio show, it was during the 2016 election when all this chaos started. He would say, Republicans know how to win, but they don't know how to govern, and vice versa. Democrats know how to govern and don't know how to win. And I think there's so much truth in that, because if you look throughout sort of the history of modern American history, at least, there's very few Democrats that I think you could really get excited about. And I think that that matters. I know that we're looking at this as like through like the practical lens of like, you don't have another choice and this is the guy that's going to do the worst. But, you know, it would be nice for once to not have to vote for the lesser of two evils. And in this case, I know he's a sitting president, but I've said on this show before, I think the strategy all along for the Dems had to have been Trump's going to be in jail. What difference does it make? Where I think that they probably should have known better than to just complete. I know he's the president and I know there's not a precedent is there a precedent for it? I don't even know if there is.
I mean, LBJ stepped down because, you know, tens of thousands of American youth were dead in Vietnam and he lied about it, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that used to be the bar
yes.
for hugely successful domestic president. Hey, but we won't stand for this. And he was like, I'm not running again.
Right. I will not.
We were all in agreement that lying about like a war.
Right.
Was bad.
Right. Okay. But then who comes in? Nixon comes in because you have that's the election where Bobby gets shot. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby's the candidate everybody's excited about. And then who ends up running against Nixon? Was it Humphreys?
It was Hubert Humphrey, I believe.
I mean, that sucks, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you just like there is historical context for some of this where you're just kind of like, God damn it. It's like we're voting for Humphrey again or whatever. The difference is Nixon at least was not, you know, not to Trump's level
and
did do some good things. But, you know,
so. But my first complaint, because I feel like I just wanted to go point by point. I'm not saying, hey, you want to be an independent, you want to not vote, you don't want to register with a party. Fine. There are consequences to that.
Sure.
And you have an opportunity to choose righteous independent who can't vote in the primary, but gets to say they did it again. They're not giving me the. Well, you didn't vote.
Yeah.
You didn't join. So how can you righteous independent person who loves just standing on the sidelines going Democrats always suck join and do something like you because you that's the thing we both know just like libertarians always magically vote for like the Republican 9 out of 10 99 out of 100 times like hey I'm not a Republican I just happen to always vote for the Republican when my guy has no shot and there are exceptions to that of course I know people who voted third party and are like principled libertarians.
Yeah.
But the left wing, it's never like, well, I guess I'm going to vote for, you know, George W. Bush.
Dude, I did a libertarian benefit once when I was still doing stand up, and it was the biggest disaster. I mean, you look just looking around at the people in the room.
I assume they didn't take taxes out of your check.
I don't think I got paid.
Oh, well, that's real libertarian.
I did the gig. It was there was a guy.
Performance is theft.
There was a guy sleeping in the back. He was on a couch asleep during the show.
And that man was presidential nominee Gary Johnson.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So that's my first thing. Like, I want to start from, you know, and in other words, AOC, Jamal Bowman.
Well, yeah.
I'm saying squad members, whether you like them or not. Notice how if Bernie Sanders, he's an independent, he caucuses with the Democrats. I'm surprised that's not some sort of apostasy. Mm-hmm. Like how could you, Bernie?
Yeah.
But that's what I'm talking about. You can be an independent, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Free country, free speech, everything. But the idea of complaining like the Democrats are doing something to you, when you would have the opportunity to make your voice heard. And I know one person is not, but if the 100,000 people who might abstain from voting or something or whatever, that's just one thing. Mm-hmm. But my thing on politics that I think a lot of people don't seem to understand, because a lot of the youth and people who are in my mentions will say things like, well, he's got to fight. I feel like the Democrats don't fight. And they don't do anything. And there's a lot of this kind of frustration. And the frustration is legitimate. But there are two ways to look at politics, in my opinion. And one is on offense, when you have the numbers. Uh-huh. And one is on defense, where you try to preserve what you can. And I think people always want offense. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They're like, why aren't they doing anything? And it's like, well, he only has 42 senators in the Senate. Literally, he can't do much with that. I'm using that as that's not the case right now. But people always want your government on offense. And sometimes, and this is the value of a Biden, like especially when you're dealing with a Republican Congress, is sometimes it's just to stop things from being taken away.
Sure.
Like abortion rights,
right,
which everybody took for granted. And that's sort of my next thing, which is like, sometimes you have to vote for somebody because they're going to stop things from being taken away. They may not be empowered to give more and to be, because we have a process for laws, plain and simple. Now, I had somebody in my mentions who was like, well, Donald Trump showed all that you can do with executive orders. And I said, Joe Biden has rescinded so many of his executive orders, but he doesn't hold up a piece of paper with his signature at a press conference, mm-hmm. like a fucking show and tell moron, which is why Donald Trump understands America better than I thought.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of fucking people who are like, whoa, Trump is fucking doing the damn thing.
But this is part of the point that I wanted to make, mm-hmm. which was that, again, speaking as your youth representative,
Youth outreach counselor.
I think the major
youth
thing,
pastor Mike Coscarelli.
I think the major thing that you're overlooking is the optic.
Well, I am tall.
Of thank you. Is the optic of, I know that the age.
Joe Biden gives off elderly. Yes,
and it's not even necessarily about the fact
Trump
that
Trump gives off showman.
Yes, yes. And I think that the younger people that are a little more radical and a little more like, you know, that are Democrats and don't really know what to do because the party's not liberal enough. I think that the overarching feeling is that somebody that is so much older than them does not have an understanding of kind of where the youth is at right now. And the youth is, by the time the next election rolls around, you're talking about they're going to be running the country in a lot of ways. Like millennials, I think, are a little more timid in general. There's like an anxiety around it, where I think Gen Z is a lot more vocal and active. I think they're closer to the hippies.
No idea what generations we are.
I'm a millennial.
What the fuck am I?
You're probably Gen X.
Oh, okay.
I think.
All right, fair enough.
I think.
Okay, cool.
But I think that they have the way that they live their life, whether it's like
quarter mile at a time.
Sure. And their philosophies or what, I mean, you can say what you want about it, and it overlooks civics or whatever. listen, man, this is the change that's happening right now. So I think there's just an overabundance of feeling that he's just kind of not with it for them. And that is why they're not as into it.
Gotcha. Now, here's, you know? Here's the thing that I would say. You know who's into it? And I don't mean to sound like Bill Maher with my facial.
You know who
is into it? Republicans. No, but Republicans are not having this sort of like, they understand the game. Like,
well, do you mean people in America that are Republicans or Republicans in office?
No. Republican voters, they have their candidate.
They understand the game?
No, what they understand is win.
Yeah. Sure, win. Yeah.
Win.
Yeah. That's true.
We're going to win. Let's try to win. How about that?
Yeah.
And then Trump will tell me what I want.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
What
yes,
I
that's
want
correct.
Is win.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you can tell, I'm making the average Republican sound like a severely impaired moron. Win. We win, and then Trump tell me what I want.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Good.
Yeah.
Go. That's the Republican Party. And we're like fucking inside out. We've got 900 voices inside going, I like that. But here's what I would say, and this is, I know my tone is a little condescending, but the first thing is, get involved with the Democratic Party.
It's not that bad, actually.
Okay,
all
good.
Things considered,
it's going to get worse.
Not worse. Not
it's
as bad as I've seen.
It's going to get worse. But get involved. This staying on the sideline thing. You know, look at their favorite politicians. You know, if you want to say an Ilhan Omar, a Jamal Bowman, a Bernie Sanders, whoever it might be, that they think that's who we need. Well, they're in politics. Yeah. They're not at a fucking coffee shop strumming their guitar talking about like Biden doesn't get me.
What year do you think this is?
I don't know. They're fucking on their MacBook forming beats for their next fucking rave.
They're not listening to Phil Oakes and Joan Baez.
but so my point would be, my advice would be, you have three choices. Do nothing. Join the Republicans. Join the Democrats. Like, in other words, you make change happen through the process, because you're not going to change things outside of the process.
Yeah.
And I know that may be frustrating to the rebels and the people who want to be like, no revolution.
I agree,
ain't
man.
No revolution. You said you're the left wing version of the right wing guy going, I need my AR-15 in case the government try to take my property.
Yeah.
You may think that you're going to lose.
Well, yeah, it's fun. This is another reason why I loved talking to Kubi so much, and I was so lucky.
Well,
I got
why
to
don't
work
you
with
marry him?
I
mean, apparently our podcast house is not a podcast home, because you're still thinking about Ron Kubi.
But Kubi, it's like I didn't really know who he was at all until I'd heard his name mentioned in the Big Lebowski. Yeah, of course, a drop that we played on the show all the time. But I didn't really know him outside of that. I had kind of heard the name. And then I started working with him and I started learning more about him. I would hear his stories and I would hear other people talk about him and everything. And he was, is absolutely like a true radical, like out in the streets. But I mean, the fact that he went to law school and actually affected a lot of these laws, I mean, that's like a true rebel. You know,
right.
He went out and
he wants to get the tools
right
to be useful
right
in a rebellion, a revolution, right, a cause.
Right.
And I'm not saying not everybody can go to law school, but you can, you can vote, you can join. You know, Bernie Sanders may not have been enough to conquer Hillary Clinton and the DNC and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I gave money to him, and this is where I build up some credibility with the
talk your shit real quick.
I gave money to Bernie Sanders in 2016, even though I voted for Hillary, because I liked his message.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was a realistic candidate to win the presidency.
Yeah.
But I did like, similar to the way I feel, it may not be enough, but protesters and people voicing their concerns and voting to abstain from primary votes, I think Biden is very aware of this and has done what he can. He's not going to become a different person. He's not going to develop a 180 approach to Israel and foreign policy.
No, I know. Yeah.
But it has changed him. Now, if it's not enough, as it isn't for many people, I understand that. But don't tell me, I'm not telling you not to protest. I'm not telling you not to shout and disrupt and do these things, as long as you're not fucking anti-Semitic about it.
Agreed.
But if you don't win on that, if you don't get everything you want, protest has a value, but also voting, you know, hey, if protest saves 100 Gazan lives, you can feel that's a victory.
Yeah. And
definitely. Then if voting for Joe Biden over Donald Trump is worth another 5,000 lives, it's not the victory you want.
Yeah.
But it is a win or a less awful loss, however you want to frame it. But so I would say stop standing on the sidelines, get something done.
Yeah. And again, with abortion, you can't vote Republican.
Yes. So that's my first thing.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay. And with my analogy of defense offense, I feel like defense may win championships, but it gets no credit in politics.
Sure. And yeah, like, you're right.
If you were to get a Republican Congress, which is possible, the Senate is very heavily leaning towards Republican. The House is a toss up. If Trump gets the House, he didn't know what the fuck to do in his first term. He got a big tax bill and Supreme Court justices. Look at all he was able to do, the havoc he was able to do without really knowing what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
Just by having a unified Republican Party that like gave him a list of judges and said, him.
Yeah.
And they got rid of abortion. And he didn't even know what the fuck he was doing.
Yeah.
And he gave a huge tax cut that ran up the deficit and the magical hypocrisy of Republicans to go, well, we'll care about debt when it's a Democrat.
Right.
That's their dance every time.
Right.
Now he will have vengeance on his mind. He will have a little more familiarity. He will have a mission and they will help him accomplish whatever his hateful mission is. And then Clarence Thomas can retire and they can nominate, like I said, Tim Scott's sperm to be on the Supreme Court for 900 years.
Yeah.
And so Joe Biden may end up just being, and Kamala Harris, if you agree with Mike that Joe Biden is not long for this world, like
King, you're voting Kamala.
King Viserys on House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Do you watch it?
No.
Great. And Joe Biden may be the thing that stops that. If the House and Senate go Republican, a Democrat president and the nominee is Joe Biden. So it's not like, yes, if it was Pete Buttigieg, a young, smart, gay guy, sure.
But do you really think that if Biden somehow does pull this out and win, that the House wouldn't go Democrat?
No, House probably will go Democrat. The Senate is very tough. No, right. But here's the thing. Senate and Trump means more judges.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more judges.
Well, it's a big problem, yeah.
So this is one of these things that you have to realize there is a defensive component. Sometimes, you know, Chris Kreider scores a hat trick when you don't bet on him to score a goal. And then other games, you bet on the Rangers to win, and Chris Kreider can't find the net, but Igor Joe Biden Shesterkin is back there going, no, I'm not letting these goals in, Jack. And you go, hey, good enough. Hey,
I'm going to stand on my head, Jack.
We're still in the game. We're still in the game because somebody is playing, is in there for us. I thought that was a good analogy.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. First of all, you have to realize that it's not just, and the thing is, historically, and I try to tell people this, FDR, LBJ,
yep.
And the first 2 years of Obama, Democrats had huge margins in both houses. And that's where you got it. The thing is, history has shown the more Democrats in office, this whole myth of like centrist bullshit. You know why Bill Clinton got elected? Because he could win.
Yeah.
You could have. I told my mom in 92, I remember I was Mr. I'd read Al Gore's like Earth in the Balance book in sixth grade. And I was like, the environment's very important. And I told her, vote for Jerry Brown. She was choosing between Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown in the Democratic primary. And she came home and said, I voted for Jerry Brown because you like him. Because he was the left wing former governor of California. Mm-hmm. And then I think future governor of California. But he, you know, I liked him more. And I was young and idealistic and just knew a few things. And I knew he talked about the climate the most. But Bill Clinton won two elections. And yes, he brought dreaded centrism and, oh, the triangulation and the cell. And yes, he sold the deregulation of the economy was bad.
But I think the difference, another thing that
but
I think
he won. They hadn't won.
I know.
In 12 years.
You're like a classical Democrat, which I'm here for and I appreciate. But I think that what's happening with history, with the last couple of Democrats, I've said this about Obama too. Obama, I don't think has proven himself to be kind of a sketchy guy. It's just kind of disappointing that he essentially left politics to be.
Fuck.
But
well, that's a new bit, by the way, that was inspired by our talk here, where I just basically do a thing where I go, I love Obama. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Biracial lawyers gotta stay together. But could you, the podcast with Springsteen, what's that, Trump selling Bibles? No, do your podcast. Totally classy.
Wait, and that is fair.
Obama,
yeah.
Why are you doing a bunch of movies on Netflix? Trump is selling sneakers? No, please, by all means. Who am I to judge?
Yeah,
movies are great. Good
and
job.
That is very fair. I mean, in comparison,
Trump
it's not nearly
as bad.
Trump
is giving him such cover to become like a Hollywood mogul.
Obama walked so Trump could run. But
Jimmy Carter is like 99 on his deathbed, still building a house.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. Habitat for the Humanity.
I think up to that point, I think politicians had kind of either like stayed around politics and, and you know.
Now, to be fair, if I can speak for Obama, as you know, we're both, you know, half black lawyers.
Sure.
Elite. We're both part of the elite.
Yep.
I think one of the reasons Michelle Obama was always going to be a no, I always found it funny. Like, I read her biography.
That she was going to run?
The idea that she is so disgusted.
Oh, she's not
by how her husband was treated and the racism. And it was like, not a chance. Like, she doesn't, and I know this is not a shot at her. She doesn't love this country that much to be like, abuse me and my children, please.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Which is why Joe Biden deserves credit for like,
I'm not done.
Jack, I got a crackhead son and I'm still running for president.
I was making a point about Clinton.
Yep.
And I think Clinton's administration, the centrist stuff, I think it'll, other than the crime bill, he'll age fine, I guess. But I think that the post-presidency and obviously the fucking affair, I think the affair now ages worse to more liberal people because there's more conversation about consent and power dynamics and sexual relationships and stuff. I think that the younger generation views Clinton through a much worse lens, not even through as a president, just as a guy. He just seems kind of like a
most jobs
sketchy guy.
Most jobs created by any president in the last 100 years.
I know, and I get that. And this is the thing. I think that there were other earlier generations could look past that and look past it and say, like, yeah, he did a good job in
office.
He's
a smart, charismatic, sleazy guy.
Yeah, right.
Like, talented, I think. And you can have two things. You can care.
Sure.
And also have real character flaws and do bad things. And but my point in bringing that up is that Democrats hadn't won in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so people then do this, like, look back, like, oh, he brought this bullshit central. We lost our liberal ways. Well, you could have elected a big liberal and fucking lost again.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? It took Obama's charisma and historical nature to get an unproven, more left, at least presenting as more left-wing president in there, because it took a war. It took a recession.
Yeah.
It took a uniquely charismatic, historical, young, good-looking, perfect, like, package to just sort of end. I think it's a lot closer if the economy does not fucking tank right before the election and McCain fucks up the whole management of, like, his campaign.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, that's what's so crazy, is to think, like, it could have been closer.
Yeah.
But Obama gets Obamacare in his first 2 years because he had like 59 senators. FDR, don't need to go into everything he did. And by the way, when people talk, I had somebody on social media say, you know, FDR, he did popular things for the people. What about that? And I go, first of all, huge majority in both houses. Secondly, left out black people to appease the Southern voters. So let's not act like it was, you know what I mean? Like, imagine a president did that today. Hey, Joe Biden got Medicare for all, just not black people. Are we down with it? Are we good? No, why not? I'm just like FDR. What's that? He got us universal health care and same day voting. And blah, blah, blah. But he said the N-word 6 times. Well, LBJ did it. Yeah. He was awesome.
Right.
So it's this idea of, like, huge majorities in history in the last 100 years. When a Democrat has a huge majority, progressives need to realize they go more progressive. Like, idea of, like, Democrats just want to sit there and be like, I'd like to do the bare minimum. and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Joe Biden had. Joe Biden did a lot for a zero majority in the Senate. He had a 50-50. Kamala Harris set a record for like most votes in 2 years as a VP. You give Joe Biden 55 senators, they'll fuck over the filibuster, at least for voting rights. I guarantee it. It was Joe Manchin that wouldn't allow that shit. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema stopped a police reform bill, the George Floyd like policing act.
Yeah.
Stopped. Stopped childhood tax credit, like that, which helped cut childhood poverty. He wouldn't do that. And voting, you could have a comprehensive voting rights bill, which then will begin the process of making us more democratic and more responsive to the voters because the system is antiquated. But you cannot, especially the left, if the right wants to have an armed rebellion, they have a shot. I don't think they win, but they actually have a shot. The left does not have an armed rebellion it.
No,
so there's no other, you have to work with the process. But if you work with the process, history shows, recent history and long-term history, the more votes Democrats have, the more they do.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I try to tell, because they're like, they don't fight. They don't do anything. We have a fucking constitution. There are rules. There are rules. And even Trump, as much as he tried to fuck them over, had to stay, you know, he might've bumped the, you know, like a bowling ball. He hit the fucking bumpers a lot.
Bumpers.
As, at least for his first term, even he was somewhat constrained by the courts. But he wants to remake a lot of that. He can flood more of his judges, etc. So it sounds weird, but I'd be like, get involved. Complaining will accomplish nothing. It just won't. I mean, it makes for great podcasting, if I do say so myself. But get involved and realize that it is the art of compromise. And the more votes you have, the less you have to compromise, but the fewer votes you have to. And sometimes you can't even get a win. You have to go for a tie, which means, hey, if I'm still in office, you won't get a nationwide abortion ban. If I'm still in office, you won't get right-wing incompetent judges who will fuck over trials for Trump. If I'm still in office, the world might actually see us as dignified, and I might not get us into conflicts with North Korea talking shit, like all these things that, like, we don't look at those, you know, as positives, but they are. And so I just think other issues, we didn't really get to the other issues, but like every issue that matters to a progressive.
Part two in 2 weeks,
maybe. Climate, not even close.
I bet you if we do a part two, numbers are going to go through the roof.
Guns, not even close. Abortion, it's light and day.
Yeah,
I think people just need to realize Biden may not be your favorite, but he is
running for president.
He is the guy, and I think you are putting your righteousness on a pedestal, and it will end up hurting more people. And I know that's a tough thing to deal with. I can appreciate that that's tough. I'm still doing comedy because I refuse to take the hint that I'm not wanted because I don't think it's right. I think I've done enough. I think I've accomplished enough. I think I have enough talent that I should be at a better place, but it's a tough thing to take. But you know, what I'm saying is, if I quit comedy, will you guys vote for Joe Biden? but I think that's enough for today. Maybe we'll do a part two. Well, we're going to talk more politics
part
as,
two,
as
yeah.
the election goes on.
That's what the people want.
But, you know, I don't think that sounded as aggressive against the youth and the left as it might have.
Well, me being here helped, I think.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, it's. You have to learn how the system works. You have to learn history. And as angry as you can be, you don't get to cause more suffering to satisfy your own righteousness. And that is what will happen if Trump gets back into office. It will be worse across the board for everything you care about. And if going to your friends and saying, I didn't vote for Joe Biden, fuck him, makes you feel good enough to sanction or allow the loss of rights and the loss of more life, I think you're not as good a person as you think, honestly, if that's the trade-off you're willing to make. So with that, we'll be back with comedy talk after the break.
And now, from the Slickback Studios newsroom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, here is Scott Pelley with a Rain on Your Parade special report.
This is Scott Pelley on assignment from 60 Minutes with JL's Punchdown of the Week. JL wrote on X, Mike, formerly known as Twitter.
Yes.
Caitlin Clark killed Jerry West so she could become the NBA logo. And a person wrote, and I have to be honest, Mike, I think this person might have been gunning for a Punchdown of the Week because this is appalling. They replied, actually, it was a conspiracy between the NBA and the WNBA.
Oh, wow.
Mike.
Thank you, Scott. Always enjoy having Scott here. His dulcet tones make me feel good. And JL, you're back.
Yeah. Well, I know. You know, but Scott knew this was like, he was like, this isn't one of these goofy episodes
that I have
to like interrupt.
That's it was why
like,
we needed this, him. This is a meaty,
this is a gravitas episode. You know, after the Travis Kelce humor up top.
Right. That was enough.
But I, you know, that was, you know, that was obviously a little bit annoying for me because I was just like, I don't even know what you're suggesting. I was doing the thing like all the hype about Caitlin Clark. I was just taking it to the next level.
Sure.
And that person said it was a conspiracy. And maybe they thought they were, you know, it felt like they thought they were punching it up. And no, it was a punch down.
Yeah.
Whatever he hits, he destroys. okay. So what is this? I'm looking for the special. I watched a special on Max. I don't like calling it Max, even though that's its official name now.
It's HBO.
It's HBO. Yeah. I just don't understand why it's just a very strange thing to get rid of.
Yeah.
What is the name of her special? Why do I always do this? Okay, here we have it. Now, there was a new special from a comedian that I do. You know, I know her from her show, Hacks, which I'm a big fan of. Hannah Einbinder. She is the co-star of Hacks. Jean Smart is the lead, and she's kind of like the co-lead.
Yep.
And I really enjoy Hacks. It's a really funny show, a really good look at stand-up, I guess, if you succeed. The frustrations of being a successful stand-up comic. Joker is a little closer
to your life.
It's a closer to my life. Joaquin Phoenix sort of captured where I'm at. Minus the fact that he actually gets fans at the end.
Right.
Like if you take that away,
right.
Murder and fans, if you remove that from Joaquin Phoenix, it's basically my life. I'm thinking of suing, Todd Phillips
and DC for a story that they created, 80 years ago.
Yeah. This might be like The Shining where it's like, he was always at the Overlook. Yeah. Was that the name of the hotel?
Yeah,
Overlook?
The Overlook. Yeah.
Well, I watched her special cause I was curious. I was like, and I saw somebody on Facebook say it was brilliant. And brilliant is always a little rough because brilliant can sometimes mean like, oh, a very nice theatrical, showy special. It may not mean funny.
Yeah.
Like the first word I look for when somebody reviews a comedy special is like hilarious. You know, that's like, and they may be an idiot and wrong, but at least I know their mind is where I want it to be when evaluating a special.
Sure.
Well, I watched it. It's called Everything Must Go. It's on Max. And I did laugh twice during the 50 minutes. But it was very theater, very like lights, and I'm doing characters. And that makes me uncomfortable because it's veering into improv, right? It's like 70% improv-y.
But you love theater.
Yeah, when it's scripted and good, not when it's like I'm abusing this, like the stand up stage. It's a bait and switch. Yeah. The stand up stage is like, all right, stand up. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second. Is this like one woman show improv? Get off me. I don't consent. I don't consent to this. Get off me. And that's what it felt like. And it's not that she is a good actress. I like her in the show. It was like too. Theatery for a stand-up special. I did laugh at a couple things, like little moments that were funny, but I think if I'm going to sum it up, and I don't mean to offend anybody with this, but the vibe was like the vibe I get when you see like somebody performing in front of like a very left gay and gay ally audience where like everything was like, woo, yes, woo, yes, yeah. And oh, it's like, is this funny?
If you don't like that, I got some bad news for you about your Stonewall show.
No. I have seen somebody else's show at the Stonewall. It was called The Glory Hole and it was wonderful. No, but it's like, you don't think they're going to love my Mike Pence material when I go there.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Oh, yeah. Hell they yeah. I'm going to run that. I'm going to fucking dominate. They're going to be calling me Harvey Milk up in that bitch. I'm going to run it. But it was like, do you know the vibe I'm talking about?
Yeah,
where it's like, yes. Oh, we love. But it's like nobody's, it's not like laughter. It's more like, yes, go girl. Yeah. And I was like, this is just confident, artsy improv. And I did not like, it was not good stand up. And I just, but hey, if what I'm describing, if you're like, I don't like traditional stand up, I like a little more, you know, kind of theatery, one woman showish, goofy, offbeat, you know, off Broadway theater humor, it might be for you. But when I watch a stand up special, I'm like, give me the stand up. And this was not it. So that's it. That's your comedy talk for the week. Mike is, you know, he's mindful right now. He's really trying not to give me the whole, like, get the fuck. I appreciate that. I feel seen. I feel welcome, even if I'm not.
You are. Oh, my God.
Everybody.
Always the fucking victim.
Everybody, I hope you liked this episode. Share it. Share the episode. Get a friend involved. Bring a friend to the Rain on Your Parade community.
Yes, please.
And please go to the show notes. Sign up for that screening of God and Country. I'm telling you, it's really good. If you can, use our link and watch it at the prescribed time. But if you can't, watch it at your own leisure on Amazon. But that's an easy way. If you're going to watch it, you can support the studio a little bit,
right?
By watching our link and then live show. So you might be able to maybe ask some questions of me or Steve during the episode.
Yeah, we'll have phone lines, open. We have to just kind of figure that out.
Oh, wow.
We
need
a burner phone. We'll figure that out.
So that will be, what did I say, June 26th, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And the movie is 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And the link will be in the show notes and on the YouTube description and on my website also on the calendar page. So that's it, everybody. I know, Mike, if you want to make some general housekeeping announcements.
You guys have been really great about going on to YouTube and leaving comments on the show, interacting with the content. It really helps us. It kind of helps game the algorithms. I've seen some comments even come in that just say, I'm just here for the algorithm. It's very nice of you guys. That actually means
a lot. If only you were there for Al Gore,
right?
We might not be here.
That's right. Anyway. So get over to the YouTube and subscribe, leave some comments and interact with the video. We appreciate that. And if you're a YouTube watcher, go over to wherever you get the audio version of your podcasts, be it Apple, be it Spotify, wherever.
Yeah. We're a little stagnant on the podcast, the audio reviews.
Yeah. So leave a review and just listen. I think anytime you can share the show, whether it's audio or video, it's incredibly helpful. So we appreciate that. And, that's really it for the plugs. What else you got? Anything?
No, that's it. I hope to see some of you in DC. Hope to see and hear from many of you on the live episode next week as well. Appreciate you listening, watching, whatever you did. And if you can share it, great. And I will see you next Thursday.